actually my professor at Seattle University College of Nursing. So I've been a nurse for a long time, 34 years, done a lot of different things in nursing, and I want to bring you all greetings and blessings from the Jesuit priests at Seattle University. I feel very, very fortunate to work in a university that has a mission that is so centered in doing Christ's work. So, and I think the Jesuits are probably some of the original outreach ministers around the world. They're really amazing. So we're going to talk this week about how do you partner effectively with other agencies and so forth in order to do outreach ministry. And I bet you everybody here is probably the worker bees in their church. You're probably the ones that are doing all this, right? And so you're probably doing most things really well and right, so I don't want you to, I'm not here to, unfortunately, give you the golden key to doing everything well.
We were kind of hoping for that golden
key. You're I'm hoping to spark some ideas. I'm sure I'm going to get as many ideas from you as, you know, you made from me, or probably more. So, and of course, at Holden, I think some of that discussion that takes place is always, you know, very enriching and always stimulating for me. So, go ahead, my lovely assistant.
Where is the button?
Well, no, the arrow key, just the forward key.
I don't know.
Here? There we go. Okay. So, this is kind of an outline of where we're going this week. I like pictures. You'll find that I like frameworks for my work. So in the middle is outreach ministries, and we are going to be looking tonight at the community. So we're looking externally tonight. What is in the neighborhood? What are the needs where we are, or the place where we're trying to do outreach ministry, and how do we determine that? And then tomorrow we're going to look within our own congregation. What are our own assets and resources that we bring? What are we currently doing, and how do we determine what's working and what's not, which is very difficult. We're going to talk about some of the ministries that we were just talking before you all came in about, the some things that just keep going forever and we struggle with, and when I think sometimes we do them out of habit, and do we need to maybe let them go, or maybe not, I don't know, or breathe new life into them. So we'll talk a little bit about that tomorrow night. And then Wednesday, we're going to talk about some of the partnerships. How do we find them, and how do we cultivate them, and in order to do some meaningful ministry? Our church, I was talking, I'm telling you your name again.
Judy.
I was talking to Judy and I at dinner, and we're talking about how both of our congregations are dwindling somewhat. We don't have nearly as many young families in our... I live in Bellevue. I go to Cross of Christ Church, and that there, the neighborhood has changed, and we're sort of struggling with how to do outreach ministry. And so we're going to talk about how can we leverage other agencies and churches and even, governmental agencies, public health and so forth, in order to do ministries in a more effective manner, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And then Thursday, we're going to talk a little bit about how do we get the money, perhaps, to do that. And so it's a little grant writing 101 class that is going to be very compact. I spend a quarter teaching graduate students how to write grants. And so to do that in an hour is going to be a challenge. I'm going to just give you kind of an idea of perhaps some of the skill sets you might need to gather together to do a grant, perhaps, and give you some good ideas, I hope. And then Friday, I think, is in many ways the most important. It's evaluation. How do we evaluate the works that we're doing? And because I think quite often we don't look back, we don't have those outcome measurements. I'm actually a researcher, so I'm always thinking about how do I measure things down the road. And it's not just churches that don't measure, what they're stop and evaluate what they're doing very much. It's all kinds of NGOs, non-governmental agencies, non-for-profits, I think. My best example that just makes me crazy is the DARE program that we sink a lot of money in every year. Do you all know that it's in the fifth grade or so? in the schools. They do this big program all year. They bring in usually in our school is a police officer, and they interact with the kids and talk about, you know, don't do drugs. It's sort of the Nancy Reagan, you know, just say no. Ridiculous model. Yeah, you see my biases. And it's what we call in social sciences a feel-good strategy. I mean, it feels really good. We're doing that. But is it making a difference? Not really. Not that program. It's kind of a little dirty secret. We sink millions into that every year. Anyway, so we're going to hopefully look at, you know, how can we measure a little bit what we're doing? And maybe pull in some other resources again to help you measure. This is my sister, Janice, who's helping me. I like to always operate from a framework. So I don't let my students just say, hey, this seems like a good idea. And we were just talking about, at your church, about how, you know, somebody came up with a good idea, right? Is it grounded in the needs of the community that you're serving? But does it also look at, this is Uri Bronfenbrenner's model. And he was a very visionary sociologist. So here's, you know, somebody in the center, and it just shows all the layers and layers that really affect people. So as we look at our neighborhoods, we can't, obviously, nobody's in an island. And there's the microsystem with the family and school and churches and so forth. And then the mesosystem where, you know, as kids and others interact with peers or our support system. And then we have the ecosystem around that, the educational system, the government system, you know, whether or not there are parks in a neighborhood and other support services that really support the families and so forth that live in that neighborhood. And then there's the overarching beliefs and values that affect everything that we believe in and the actions that we may take. Of course, I'm a nurse, so I'm always thinking of health. That affect our health and so forth. So it's the culture, but also the belief system that we've grown up with. And then time, for me, as a prevention scientist, I'm always looking at, when I intervene here, 5 years down the road, what's gonna happen? And so I think as we develop these outreach ministers, we need to you know, think about all these other systems, sort of a more complex system theory that I think you've all learned about probably in school. And then, you know, in 5 years from now, can we say that what we dreamt up at this point is making a difference? Is it doing what we thought it would do? And that's where I get very excited. You know, I like to design things that then hopefully down the road I can look and say, yes, what I designed or what we all designed collectively together has made a difference in people's lives. So tonight we're going to talk about doing the neighborhood kind of community assessment, as I said. And first of all, you have to define your community, and we do that in several ways. It might be geographic. It might be, you know, where you look at, outline an area around your church, or maybe it's another area that you're looking at. Perhaps you're saying, you know, I live in a really wealthy suburb, so let's look at this neighborhood here, you know, because we understand there's a lot of needs. Our sister church or whatever in this neighborhood is telling us they want us to partner with them and look at the needs. It might be around a common interest. So it might be, you know, around like Lutherans getting together to, is the community, or it might be a professional association, or people with preschoolers, or it might be, you know, women with breast cancer, we were talking about last night. So it's a common interest that we all come together. Homelessness in King County. I would refer quite a bit to, I think most people here are actually from the immediate area, but if you're not, you'll forgive me, I'm going to speak mostly about King County and my examples. And then the community of solution is sometimes where, you know, a group of people who come together to solve a problem that sort of affects all of them. So it might again be a neighborhood, community that comes together. I'm working right now with a community that's just south of Seattle University, and it's mostly Somali. So they definitely are coming together as a community to solve a common problem, and they just did a big fundraiser. It was actually in the Seattle Times. They raised quite a bit of money for famine in Somalia. It was very, very, very effective, and some of our students were involved in that. So this is an example of a geographic area that's very specifically designed for outreach, and it's our Seattle University Youth Initiative, and this is our neighborhood. And so we deliberately drew lines about what our focus area was going to be about. So sometimes when you obviously come together as a community, as I said, it's not around a neighborhood. It might be another interest or something, and so it might be very expanded, but this is just an example of clearly defined boundaries for what we want to do. So we're working, for example, with the neighborhood house running a Head Start program there, and also there's a grade school, Bailey Gatzert, that's in our neighborhood, and clinics, Odessa Brown, and other community clinics in that area that we're partnering with, and we're specifically focusing on youth. And we are wanting to see, as we focus on the kids at Bailey Gatzert and develop after-school programs, we've hired a liaison that I say we have a whole group of people that are focusing on this, and I'm tangentially involved, but we've hired somebody who will be the liaison between us and the grade school, and one of our long-term outcome measures is going to be kids going to college. We would really like to raise that bar with the members of this community. The principal at the grade school is very involved and so forth. So that's just an example of a very defined geographic boundary. So, and you know, I'm talking away here. I meant to say, please jump in if you have a comment or a question. I get excited and I just start going, because this is fun work. It's messy work, but it's fun work. So for geographic, you know, I quite often will have students use zip codes, you know, and when I'm working on a project with them, because they're census tracts, I think are very useful. We're going to start talking about data. Census tracts are very useful, especially with the 2010 census coming out. There's a lot of really great data available about people in a neighborhood. But you might use neighborhoods like Seattle area. We have some very specific neighborhoods. We have the Ballard neighborhood, and we have the Green Lake neighborhood, and they're pretty well defined, and you can actually find information on those neighborhoods about the people that live there. So depending upon where you are and how things are defined, you know, will it help you define your neighborhood?
Well, I'd just like to say that I think on the ELCA website, there were zip code census data that you could pull up for the zip code that you were interested in.
Oh, I didn't look at that. Now, I did look at ELCA for some community assessment stuff, but I didn't see that. Hmm. I'm going to have to go back and look. Is it 2010?
No.
Or 2000?
I haven't looked yet.
They're just still sifting through 2010, but some stuff is coming out. So first of all, we want to figure out who lives in our community. And I say sit down with people, if you're in your church, and start talking and compare notes. Talk with people with historical knowledge. And you're also going to want to identify community leaders, and then census data we're going to talk about a little bit, and other kinds of data. And community, that can be tricky. And as we do what we call in nursing a windshield survey, you may hopefully run across some community leaders. In the neighborhood by Seattle University, there's definitely some community leaders that... I don't know if are you all familiar with the housing development called Yesler Terrace?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very interesting.
Yes.
It's set to be torn down, so I'll be talking a little bit throughout the week about my work there. I'm actually working with a group of, there's six of us, faculty, very diverse group of faculty. It's been an incredible experience as we've been working with Head Start group there at Neighborhood House, looking at developing programs for children. We have a photographer on the team, a historian who's an expert in East African history and is from Nigeria. Our photographer is French and married to a Cuban, so she's off in Cuba right now. We have a qualitative researcher who's originally from Poland, very diverse group, and there's me, the middle-aged white woman, and who's our other member? Oh, education for early childhood specialist on the team who's Chinese and grew up in the United States. But anyway, so as we have worked and with this community and identifying leaders, one of the challenges of that is that the leaders shift over time. And so we're having a really interesting challenge right now in that some of the leaders that we identified in the Somali community have shifted. So as we started a research project in interviewing parents, we've had someone else come in and say, wait a minute, you didn't go through the proper channels with the elders and so forth, and it's been very educational for me, but also kind of challenging. So sometimes when you're working, particularly with people from such a different culture, and you think you've identified the leader, of course, it'd be like coming up into the Lutheran community or in your church and saying, who are the leaders? And we'd say, well, I think this person is. You know, they have all this historical knowledge. They're an elder. They've done all this. And other people would say, no, I'm the leader. You know, or this person is. So it's very similar. But the whole point of all this is to get some good information about who's living in that community. So what we do is we start by walking the neighborhood. I mean, the windshield survey means you're walking or driving the neighborhood to really see what's going on and hopefully meeting some people too. In my church is in a neighborhood that has drastically changed over the last 20 years or so, or 25 years. It used to be in the 50s and 60s when the church started, you know, a lot of young families. It was a suburb in Bellevue where, you know, tons of kids. People didn't really have to do outreach for youth groups and so forth because there were just kids everywhere, and most everybody looked like me, you know. White sort of Scandinavian or waspish looking. And that has really changed. And many of the families that live there, are still members. We have some charter members that are still very active in the church. But most, well, I don't know how many, but quite a few have moved away. They've moved not too far. They've moved up in Sammamish Hills or other areas that are very nice. And, you know, they've gotten bigger and nicer homes. And maybe some of their kids or other people come in there, but they can't afford to maybe buy a house in that immediate area that they would like. There are some houses that you could probably buy that are not so nice anymore. I live in this neighborhood. Anyway, so we have people commuting in from all over. And definitely the minority of people that attend the church are actually living in the neighborhood. So as I was talking to our outreach person a couple of weeks ago, because we would like to do a class like this in the fall, she said, it's so funny you say this, Bonnie. I said, we need to walk our neighborhood. I do walk the neighborhood because I live there. But she says, that's exactly what Pastor was just saying the other day, is that people have lost touch with this neighborhood. And it's very easy to do. You know, 10 years goes by and the neighborhood changes. So even if it is your neighborhood, think about your normal routes and take a different one. You know, drive around, take a different one, walk somewhere, do something different. Go to a community event that you normally might not attend to see who goes. We went to the Strawberry Festival not too long ago, and boy, there were a lot of Hispanic people there. Having a great time in the park close by. It was really great to see. And we have, really, I can't think of any Hispanic people that are in our church. I think St. Louis down the street, though, the Catholic Church they have a whole service in Spanish. So yeah. That may be why. Most of them may be Catholic. But still, it sometimes it's a little startling when you attend things in your own neighborhood and you say, this has really changed. So go to parts of town you haven't seen lately. Walk down alleys, wander neighborhoods. This is by these, I got this resource online. I thought it was nice the way they had sort of summarized this, called New Pathways to Planning. We want to look first at the community core. You know, what are the old established neighborhoods? You want to, and all of this is going to add up to, you know, the assets and the needs for the community. Are there new subdivisions? As you walk around, are there, you know, boarded up buildings? How kept up are the houses as you walk through? It's our neighborhood is very interesting. As I start to drive around, I was taking something by one of our members the other day, and from block to block, it really varies. You have some very kept up homes, then you have some homes that are obviously in disrepair, and I think some are being foreclosed, you know, in this economic climate and so forth. But getting an idea about, you know, what's going on economically and, you know, who lives there? What are the type of people that you see? You know, young, old, homeless? What are the kinds of dress that they're wearing? We certainly have more and more Muslims in our area, and it's interesting, you know, for about 10 years, right in our neighborhood, I mean, I know in Bellevue as a whole, we're very close to Microsoft as well, so we have, you know, we have this real divergence of socioeconomic, you know, strata that runs through there, but what was I going to say? I knew the two homeless people that resided in our neighborhood. The same two people that I have seen for years and years, since the kids were little, and we'd go up to the park, and it's one guy, and I'm always kind of on the lookout for him, you know, to sort of see how he's doing. And I just noticed this summer a third guy that is now in our little circle neighborhood. And he's going around with a sort of a wagon on the back of his bicycle with all his belongings. And anyway, so I, at our church, there was one woman and one man before this other guy. And the woman we're very familiar with and would, you know, give her sort of a safe haven once in a while, but she definitely has some mental health issues as well, so that can be kind of a challenge. But just being aware of who those people are, and is it increasing, you know, from what you can see, gives you an idea of what's going on. What are the values and beliefs of the neighborhood? What kinds of churches, what kind of mosques? About 10 years ago, we had a temple built across the street from us, and they've become somewhat of a partner in our outreach since then. What's the cultural heritage and markers? It really gives you an indication of the kinds of people that are living there. Any questions or comments?
I'm wondering how long you take to do all this, and is it like if you have a committee in your church of eight people or something who might be interested, how long does something like this take?
Wouldn't take a real long time. I wouldn't make this a huge endeavor, and I'm glad you brought that up. I would divvy it up. I would, if you have a community, as big a committee as possible, and invite people in the church to participate. That's what I'd like to design this fall with our church, is to invite members of the congregation to participate. Perhaps have a seminar and say, let's divvy it up. Who's going to look at which neighborhood and what we're going to look at, and then come back and compare notes. And so this is obviously not a real scientific, you know, study or anything like that, but it's really to give you an overview of what's going on in your neighborhood. And I think for our church, it's really time that we did that. You may not need to. You may be very on top of what's going on in your neighborhood, in your church, depending upon where you are. And you may just need to compare notes and maybe brush up on some stuff. But I wouldn't take weeks or anything to do it. I think you could go out and do a windshield survey in, you know, an afternoon if you divvied it up among people.
I just want to say that the scenario that you laid out regarding the church that you attend seems to be a fairly common pattern.
The what that I laid out?
The pattern of your church where you're saying, you know, in the 50s and 60s there was more there were more children than you knew what to do with, and
yeah.
And there was a there wasn't a any diversity in the nationality in the neighborhood. And I reflected that conversations with other people in Lutheran churches, this is a fairly common scenario, and it's the same scenario that we have at Holy Cross in Bellevue, down the road from
yeah.
you. And in our case, we've done a little bit of this, excuse me, the demographics, and what we're faced with around us is our zip code is the second most affluent zip code in the state of Washington.
Ah.
We don't live in that zip code, actually.
98006. And this was from the 2000, so you know, so in 10 years there may have been some different changes, but the demographic change that we've seen in our community is a growing Asian community,
mm-hmm.
and that and we had a associate pastor or an intern that worked with us who came from. From Thailand?
Indonesia,
and he kind of explained how the way that the Americans treated the Asian community early on makes it very difficult for a faith community to reach out to the Asian community.
Yeah.
You know, because of the discrimination, and you know, and because of the treatment in terms of salary and just a whole lot of things. So it's very difficult for a European-based faith community to reach out to the Asian because of that difference.
So you may have to find a partner that could help you build that bridge. Is what I would suggest. You know, because I'm certainly finding some trust issues with me being a white person with
right.
You know, some of the Somali communities.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that's just the way it is. You know, you can't. Sort of is what it is, but yeah. So knowing your neighborhood and knowing that it really gives you a step up about then how can you problem solve around that? I think. Get a cultural interpreter. That's what we have with our Somali group.
And then during the course of the week, I think we can talk a little bit about what the Holy Cross is doing for reaching out to the community, not so much in this, but also in other ways, and so
okay,
I don't want to dwell on it. I just,
yeah,
you know, I'm just resonating that if our faith community faces that, my speculation that this is a very common scenario for the Lutheran Church,
mm-hmm. yes,
at large.
Yeah,
well, and I think other denominations as well.
As well as
yes.
yeah, exactly, yeah. exactly.
The main line. Yeah.
The ones whose heritage is European Christian.
Yes.
They're very much faced with the same issue.
Yeah. Go
ahead. Well, I have one other question.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the purpose of the outreach to get more members? See, I don't see that
no,
as the purpose.
No.
I see
right.
it as just doing an assessment of the neighborhood just to find out,
yes.
you know, maybe what type of ministry you want to provide or who you want to partner with. Not,
right.
not necessarily to bring more members into our churches.
No, you're correct. That's really not the purpose of what I'm talking about, is to bring in more members. Although hopefully, you know, it has that side effect. Have you all participated in that natural church development?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, then, what's your pastor's name? I think
Gary Delanius.
Hmm?
Gary Delanius.
Oh, I know him.
Yeah.
Because I'm
yeah.
thinking on...
Yeah, we went through the natural church development.
Because I think
yeah.
he was like... coaching our pastor on that. Well,
okay.
The reason I bring that up
yeah.
is that they have the six areas of that you need to sort of shore up, and outreach ministry is one of them. So you know, hopefully by doing that, you're having a more healthier environment, and so it's going to be you know more enticing to members. That's one of the things Natural Church Development does for
congregation. Just we'll speak to when you talk about the community, and you know you talked about a specific area, but within your early bullets you also talked about recognizing you say in your ministry area, well, it's just not, it's not just this geographical area that I'm addressing, because this geographical area is the second or third most affluent in the state of Washington. So in terms of outreach to them, but then take a look at a broader thing, in all of King County, the issue is homelessness.
Right.
With the King County setting a 10-year goal of ending homelessness. So then the involvement with
yes.
your community is an education to an affluent community as to what the needs are.
Well,
so,
then your outreach, I think, is around not so much a geographic area, but it's around a common issue, like homelessness.
Right.
So
yeah.
that's
yeah.
so as you talk about your community, so this is geared, this first part is really
mm-hmm.
around knowing your neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
but it may
mm-hmm.
be that you want to get to know a neighborhood where there is more homelessness, or as you all know, if you're on the east side, we have the Congregations for the Homeless
mm-hmm.
on the east side. So that's churches partnering together around an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So not so much in a geographic area, but well, it's all the east side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very effective.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so it's not always a specific area.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And so, but if it is, and you're doing your windshield survey, you want to look at the subsystems as well. You want to look at the physical environment. You know, are there parks? Are there, you know, how much green space and so forth? Are there, you know, porn shops or whatever? Are there, is, you know, health and social services? What kind of agencies are there? What is there? What are the resources for the people in that community? And we talked a little bit before about the indicators of a healthy economy. Transportation, is there, you know, are there buses, police, and so forth? And now we have a little city hall at our Crossroads Mall. We also have a little police substation and so forth there. Those sorts of services make for a healthier community. So looking, you know, thinking about that Bronfenbrenner model where you're looking at you know, the subsystems as well, and what goes into supporting the families in that neighborhood. You know, we want to get an idea, and this also gives you some starts on what agencies might you partner with as you walk around and look at things. And you say, well, I never realized that agency had relocated here. You know, sometimes it surprises you. Like Hope Link is in our neighborhood, and we do a lot of work with them. But sometimes maybe there's someone else that you might come across that you know, is doing some work in the neighborhood. Common places where people gather, and I think it's good to spend time there to get a flavor of what's going on. Are there schools and libraries and so forth? And recreation. So just taking note of all those. Or if you haven't walked in that neighborhood for a while to see what has perhaps gone away, or what isn't as well kept anymore, what isn't as safe, perhaps, for children to play where it used to be. All of those things, I think, go, and I know from research, go into health and well-being of a neighborhood. So. And then pulling that together, so if you divide up into teams and go out in pairs or whatever, this doesn't have to be super formal, come back and then you know, in sharing all that together and identifying the strengths and weaknesses, you know, it's nice if you can talk to some people on the way about, you know, what are their perceptions of the community, if you can identify some leaders, ask a variety of people from different groups and agencies, and then your own general impressions, and then try to pull that together to identify some themes of where you might focus your energies. Realizing that tomorrow we're going to talk about, you know, our own strengths and resources that we have within our own church and how we might match that up and where are the gaps. Okay. Now we're going to delve a little bit deeper into demographics. I know Janice brought up the ELCA site. Is that I have actually some sheets here of websites that I'll be talking about. And it's not really my intent to make you all researchers. I have to confess that I love data. I mean, that's because I deal with it a lot, and it's a lot of fun for me to sift through a lot of data and statistical packages and so forth and look at that. But So hopefully I won't overwhelm you with some examples, but it is sort of fun. And if you have someone in your congregation that loves doing that, an engineer or somebody, I don't know, systems analyst, then you don't want to go overboard. You just want to get enough to where you can make some good decisions. So there is a web page for the 2010 census where you can get some quick facts. They haven't sorted through all the data yet, but there is the beginnings, and it's for me, it's not enough detail to make decisions, but there is some there, and I'm sure more is going to be coming as the year goes on. There's the county public health web pages are actually a great sources of information. King County has a wonderful website, and it does have some neighborhood information on it. There's social and health indicators across the county, so you can, it breaks it down by four areas, so you can get an idea of maybe in your area, what are the issues? What are the health issues? Where could we possibly help? Is it around children, or is it around seniors and so forth? And there's a census viewer for cities, regions within King County, and I have an example of that. For those of you, though, who are in a smaller area, like Renton, I think is a good example of this, they do have a chamber of commerce quite often. For Seattle, no, it's too big. But a smaller town, I did some work years ago, consulting work in Monroe, and they have a wonderful chamber of commerce where I got all kinds of data about who lives there and businesses and what's going on. So you want to break it down or hopefully get to data that's usable and workable and not overwhelming. Go ahead. So this is what I got actually from the King County census page, and there's the program called a Geographic Information Systems, a GIS program, that it's so much fun to use, I can't even tell you, but it's but you have to love data to use this program. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not saying that you have to learn this program. What is so cool about the King County website is that they will hone down on an area. So this is Bellevue. So you can choose a neighborhood area. And then you can, what GIS does and the census data does is it allows you to pick a couple of variables, like an area, and then I said, okay, show me the distribution of people under 18, because I'm always interested in children and outcomes for them. And I had to make my own little key over here because it didn't come out, and this color was not quite matching, so I have an arrow to say that's that color. And so anyway, we look at our neighborhood, which is right here. This is Larson Lake, so that's our little crossroads area. And what's fascinating is that there's 20-30% of the population there is under 18. So this is kind of a quick and dirty look at if you're interested in a particular age group, or they have it by ethnicity. So you can say, okay, how many, so if I want to know, well, how many Somalis are living in this area? It would break it up like that. So the King County lets you, in 5 minutes, you could do this. It's not that complicated. You could pick a couple of variables, the place and ethnicity or an age group or something, and it'll plot it on there for you, and it'll come up with a map like that, just to give you a quick and dirty idea of what's in your neighborhood. And what was so funny, when I showed this to Vernette, our outreach person, she said, you know, I was sort of going through this with her last week, and, you know, as we planned for fall, and asked her, and I said, I'm curious if you have any suggestions for me before I go to Holden. She said, I'll be darned. People keep telling me that we have no kids in this neighborhood. And would you look at that? There's between 20-30% of our population are kids, and they're under 18. And she said, we do have kids here. So we don't have this really precise data. But it was sort of a revelation to her that it dispelled a bit of a myth in our congregation. So I'm not saying that you're going to do this detailed study using statistics, but sometimes it just gives you a little bit of an overview about, wow, we have more kids than I thought. So where are these kids, and what are they like? And then you could possibly delve deeper into data.
Well, you said you had a lot of Hispanics in your area.
Yeah, so
and they tend to have large families.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
But I'm impressed with the dark reds over in Redmond.
Oh, you know, this is up that Sammamish Hills.
Mm-hmm.
And so the church that's up, the Lutheran church up in Sammamish Hills up there, I'm trying to think of...
It's Sammamish Hills.
Sammamish Hills Lutheran Church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have a huge youth program.
Wow.
It was my understanding a few years ago, last time I talked to... So, and... Yeah, they've got a bunch of kids up there. They've got a bunch of young families. So they're pulling in a lot of kids.
It's like the young families are moving further and further out.
Yeah, part of it, well, I guess there's many reasons for that, but affordability.
Because I used to live in your neighborhood.
Did you?
I was one of the young families back in the 60s.
Oh, where did you live?
In Lake Hills.
Yeah, because we live right at 153rd and
everybody had six. Kids and all the husbands worked for Boeing.
Huh.
Right. Yeah, and I imagine that the Des Moines has a lot of the same kind of families in that. Yeah, the 60s and all the...
I was reading that even like in Manhattan, you know, you look at the cathedrals where, you know, all the Irish used to live and the Italians, and then they all moved out to the suburbs. So this has been an ongoing problem as population shifts.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't look at it as a problem. I'd look at it as, you know, we've just got to look at it a little bit differently. Okay, here's who's in our neighborhood, and how can we build those bridges? And sometimes, you know, as I said, this is not to build membership, the purpose of this week, but sometimes in doing those outreach, you know, hopefully you do build membership. So, and I have a handout with a list of websites on there to kind of give you some ideas of where to go. If you have an engineer in your congregation that loves... Geographic Information Systems is just, it's a very fun program. And it allows you to map all kinds of things. You take like a bare map of a neighborhood, and then you pull in census tract data, and you can pull in, so you can look at all the seniors in a neighborhood, and then you can also plot on there social agencies. It's amazing what's in the census database. And so it's kind of cumbersome to use. So I was really pleased to see this on King County, where anybody could pick and choose a couple of things and it'll make you a nice map. But if you want to delve deeper and deeper and you have somebody that's willing to do that, it's kind of fun. But I would only do it to serve, you know, a purpose. Sometimes you get so much information, you don't know what to do with it. You're like, oh, now what does this mean? The other thing is, you know, you don't have to do all this research on your own, because if there are social agencies in your neighborhood, they know who they're serving. They know the people in that neighborhood. So the mental health agency, so as you do your walk around, I would just make an appointment to sit down and talk with someone and say, you know, tell me about the people that you're serving. Are you seeing a change? Are you seeing, you know, what are the demographics? People are often very happy to share information with you, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Who's getting, you know, financial and housing assistance, the community outreach centers and so forth. Catholic Community Services is very big, and they're a great source of information. So, other churches, you know, what changes are they seeing? We have, I'll talk about more on Wednesday, we actually have a formal covenant with two churches and now also the temple in our neighborhood. So the Episcopalians and the Catholics and us. You're nodding your head. So that's been going on quite a while, that covenant.
Church of the Resurrection?
Yes. And
St. Louise.
And is that where you attended church? Is Church of the Resurrection when
that
you
was
lived
my
there?
Church when I lived there.
So did we have that covenant in place when you
I
were there?
I don't think so. That was a long time ago.
Okay. Because it's been around for quite a while, and it's neat. It's a formal agreement, but... as I talked with Vernette about this, we also talked about how we need to perhaps look at renewing it and making it a little bit more vibrant again. But all of these, you know, other agencies and churches and so forth are just great sources of information. Who are they serving and has that changed? And what's effective? Where do they need? And then as you start to ask about the people that they're serving, it's sort of an entree into, you know, how can we perhaps help? Okay. And then an asset assessment, we were talking about that at dinner a little bit. It's just it's the same sort of thing, but it's just another way of looking at what the community and, you know, what are the community's greatest strengths. So you're really looking at the half full glass as opposed to the deficits. But also stepping back and thinking about things as, you know, what are sources of community pride? You know, and how can we build on that? What groups in this community really make a difference in the well-being of the community? What, you know, where are we seeing groups that make a difference? We have We have Boys and Girls Club, and we have a community center, and we also have a youth. It's a brand new facility at the Crossroads Park. It's really wonderful, and I think they're making a big difference. And I really don't know so much, you know, just what I've heard and seen, but going in and actually talking to them about what they're doing would be a good thing for our church to do. We have no relationship with them because they're kind of new to the neighborhood. Who are the people who take care of others? And to what extent do people know their neighbors? So looking at the positives in that neighborhood. And some of that just has to be done by getting out there and talking to people who live in the neighborhood. And this is just an example of mapping out. There's all different ways that you can map out assets of a community. But this is, again, sort of along the lines of the Bronfenbrenner model, where you might focus on individuals and then associations and then branch out to schools and other facilities and so forth. So particularly if you got to know different groups, you know, on the individual level, different community leaders and that have strengths and so forth, it's helpful, I think, to identify those people in terms of then going back later and being able to talk to them and partner with them. Yeah.
What do you mean by label people by gifts, under gifts of individually?
You know, label.
In the corner, label.
Oh, you know, this is actually, I'm not exactly sure. This is from a colleague of mine. She gave it to me from one of her slides. It's a deal that, so I'm sorry. I don't know what she means by labeled people now that you ask me.
Looks like it might be Canadian.
Yeah, the spelling's
different.
What are ovals?
What are what?
Ovals, yeah.
Oh. I don't see that.
It's on the
very left side.
The churches.
Must be, yeah, you would think it'd be others, or I don't know. But I'm going to go back and ask her. That's the one slide. That's the one slide I got from somebody else because I just couldn't find an example of an assets map. So I apologize for that. But.
So I want to ask you a question. Asset map and the term sounds familiar, something that we were involved with the Holy Cross. Were you involved with the Intentional Ministries program because that's one thing that came out of Intentional Ministries was asset maps, remember? And we weren't directly involved. Other members who attended that. And they were talking about doing an asset map, and I don't know if the Holy Cross ever got to that, did they? But they were talking about that's one thing they wanted to do.
I'm not sure what Intentional Ministries is, but it sounds very similar. So
a lot of the what you were talking about with walking the neighborhood and so forth, that was one of the ideas that was coming out of Intentional Ministries. So I was wondering if there was involvement there.
No. Yeah, and asset mapping, I think, really crosses a lot of disciplines in terms of a technique to just kind of get a handle on. And I like visualizing things.
Yeah.
So you can make lists, certainly. You
sure.
can make columns or scribble them up on the board or, you know, as you meet together and start comparing notes, whatever works. And at the end, hopefully, you're coming up with, okay, these are the potential partners for us, or these are the partners that we've had in the past. Like as I was talking to Burnett, with the Temple Benai that's close to us, they're a part of our covenant, but then again, they aren't, because we, with St. Louise and Church of the Resurrection, we do things like Vacation Bible School together.
Good.
Yeah, which we, and it really is great, because to do all that on your own, we all want to do it, why, you know, it makes a lot of sense. We have all the little kids at, usually at our church, and the bigger ones down at St. Louise, and but of course the temple does not participate in that, you know, it would be crazy, but there's other things that we'd really like to participate. We do Thanksgiving service with them, and we always seem to have it at the temple now. We used to rotate that around.
Oh, really?
Thanksgiving Eve.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and when they were really pleased to be invited to be a part of that when they moved into the neighborhood. But we were talking about, we do quite a bit of work with homeless, you know, the homeless congregations for the homeless and so forth and other things. And they are actually hosting Tent City at the temple.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I believe it started the beginning of August. Yeah. They've done it before.
That temple, that's the one over, and that's what about the
right.
Near the crossroads. That's about the third or fourth time that they've done that. They
they've been very
active and that's the Tent City 4 and Holy Cross then partners with. So what we'll do is we'll bring meals to them.
Serve
meals at Tent City 4.
At the temple or wherever they are.
We've done it at the temple. We've done it at the Kirkland and Church of Christ. And we at one time posting Tent City at our property in Victoria.
Ah.
We got our 5 minutes of fame on the news because. Because we were picketed one Sunday morning.
Yeah. It's very controversial. I was trying to describe this to Connie last night, this Tent City, because she was like, you had never heard of doing such. Of course, in Minnesota, where the weather is so terrible, I was saying that would be one big barrier. But I was going to say, it's been interesting. We suddenly realized as we were talking about how they're hosting it this month, that they really haven't had a lot of contact with us to help. And Vanessa, you know, and she says, I'm not exactly sure. We just need to renew that partnership somehow. We need to.
Well, and part of that, because of the way that the Tent City operates, the resources that support Tent City come through ShareWheel.
Right.
So ShareWheel is the one that is the organization that posts. A schedule on the web, and
but we got a pretty specific request from the Church of Kirkland for
that's true. That's true.
They were a small congregation.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah.
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 But this is before we were quite involved when they hosted it, and we were just realizing, gee, we're not really doing much. What happened?
Yeah.
Do those three or four churches, or including the synagogue, do you do a congregations for the homeless thing?
Also?
Because we do that in the Victoria area.
We hosted at our church in May every year.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
As we have diminished in size, we have other congregations helping us provide meals and so forth.
Right.
So that's a good example of
where
we've needed to pull in some other resources. We couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's